Start. Good morning.
Good morning.
We've got a busy schedule today. This is our first major budget work session, and I'm going to work very hard to hold us to the schedule that is in the meeting packet. So with that, Mr. Reinhart, kick us off.
I believe Director Scott's kicking us off.
All right,
correct?
We're off to a good start.
Well,
Director
welcome.
Scott, kick us off.
Was that all you needed on OMF, Tom? Are we good? I'll go over today's schedule briefly, and then we will dive into the substance. So we do have a busy day today, as the mayor mentioned, and actually it's a busy 4 days. So of work sessions coming up. Today, I'm going to give a little bit of an overview just in terms of logistics and what we're going to be talking about over the next few days. OMF's going to talk about their budget request, and then we're going to move from there into a performance and budget mapping update. We're going to talk about the Portland plan update. We're going to talk about citywide asset management, and then we're going to complete today with a discussion of the auditor's budget. Everyone at the table, the community advisors and council members should have binders. In your binders, if you haven't already gone through them, but you probably have, you will find there's some summary information in the front. There are CBO reviews in the tabs, and there's also bureau presentation materials in the tabs for the most part. Some of the bureaus may be bringing presentation materials to this session, so as we go through the next few days, you may get at the very beginning some hole-punch presentations. Go ahead and drop those into your binders as well. In terms of overall format, bureaus during these work sessions, these really are the opportunity for bureaus to talk about their requested budgets directly with council. They will be presenting requested budgets, but as we found over the years, these sessions go best when council and the community advisors engage in question and answers throughout. So please don't hesitate as questions come up. Just go ahead and ask those questions as we go. The bureaus know that that's likely to happen as they go through their overall presentations. And as I mentioned, sort of the overall goal is to have a discussion that really informs the budget conversations that are going to be happening over the next few weeks and months. And it's also an opportunity to request additional information from bureaus. So as things come up, and as you have additional questions, information that the bureaus may not have, feel free to put those questions into the record. We are keeping track of that, and then we work with the bureaus afterwards to compile that information and get it back to council in response to those questions. Very briefly, I'm going to have Josh talk a little bit about financial update, where we are today and where we expect to be over the next when we get to the final forecast in April. And then, as I mentioned, we'll go through the rest of the schedule. And after Josh is done, I'll have just a few comments overall about CBO's recommendations.
Okay, thanks. Again, I'm Josh Harwood, the city economist in the city budget office. We updated the December forecast in February with some newer data, and not unexpectedly, given our financial policies for conservative forecasting, the picture does look a little bit better than it did in December. It still calls for a very modest $1.5 million ongoing cut and a little less than $25 million in one-time resources available. We will issue a final forecast in April. Right now, essentially what we're seeing is continued growth in our revenues, albeit at slower rates than we've seen over the last few years. And this is normal, and I would expect this. We're seeing this in the general economic picture as well. We're in a very mature spot in the business cycle, and so companies are finding, we're having slower job growth because companies are having trouble finding workers. The ability to increase revenues has slowed a bit. And so that's essentially where we are. The big point coming up is April 15th when people pay their business license taxes. That will be the determining factor on where we end up at going into the mayor's proposed budget. I would expect that, if anything, we might add to that one-time surplus. The reality is that the business license tax growth has been historic in the last few years. And both myself and my colleagues at the county have looked into some of the underlying data, and what we're seeing is it being driven in part by one-time property transactions and real estate activity. And so those are the things that will slow the quickest when the economy does sort of slow. So that essentially creates a big one-time surplus, but doesn't really necessarily add to our tax base in the same way. So I'm happy to answer any questions about where we're at, but that's sort of the picture as we sit today.
Very good. Thank you.
So with that, sort of setting the overall context for these conversations, as Josh mentioned, a $1.5 million ongoing deficit is not is really not very significant. It's about 1/3 of 1%. And I think if that was all we had to deal with in this budget, it would be relatively straightforward, you know, some trims around the edges. But I think what we know, having read through the Bureau requested budgets and having, you know, sort of listened to the mayor's priorities as he issued guidance this year, is that we have a number of significant priorities and significant needs in the community. And I think that's really the frame to think about the conversations over the during these work sessions and over the next few weeks. That, you know, it's not just the $1.5 million shortfall, it's the other things, the new programs, the new priorities that we need to add.
So if I could just add a brief color commentary, three sentences. The cost structure is out of whack with the revenue structure. So we have a persistent shortfall. Costs are growing faster than revenues are growing, and the city is changing. So our priorities change, and new programs are waiting in line to the tune of, I think, $130 million in terms of ad requests this year. And so the bigger picture budget question is, do we back off of certain priorities from the past in order to make room for new priorities while also trying to think about how to be more efficient in spending our resources so we bring revenues and costs into alignment? And we really struggle with that. Let's be honest about it. And this is the best revenue picture we're ever going to get, at least as long as we are all sitting up here. I think that's a pretty safe bet. So the question is, are we able to do those two things? Are we able to change priorities based on changing needs in the community, bring our revenue and cost structure into alignment, and then adding to that, are we prepared for a real economic down cycle? And this is what's keeping me up at night. I don't think we're at all prepared for that. And so that's going to continue to be a question that I'll have hanging over this entire process, just so you know.
And I could not have said it better myself. I think that's exactly right, Mayor. And I think that you know, as we talk about going into this budget, it's really, I think, the intent, you know, behind sort of the guidance to bureaus to look for those 5% reductions. It wasn't intended as just an academic exercise. It was really intended to look very critically at our existing programs to determine, are there things that are lower priority than the new items that we know need to happen, the new, you know, things that the community's, you know, demanding from us, and that we can make those realignments at the same time, as you mentioned, looking for those efficiencies and figuring out the long-term cost structure. So that was all I had for an overview. Any questions before we dive into OMF?
Bless you.
Great. Tom, thank you.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler and Council.
Good morning.
Good morning, community budget advisory members and colleagues. Welcome to the budget session. I don't think anybody welcomed us, so let me do that. Welcome. And we're eager to get started. I'm Tom Reinhart, Chief Administrative Officer, Director of the Office of Management and Finance. I'm proud to be here today representing the nearly 650 employees of OMF, as we call it, and their fine work. I'm also proud to be representing the partner bureaus in terms of our enterprise work and all the challenges we face together and what we see as a central service provider in terms of the stress and pressures in providing services that all the bureaus face. Here's the plan today. I'm going to give an overview of what we do and who we are as the Office of Management and Finance. I'm going to talk a little bit about what I view as the Portland story, building on what the mayor just relayed to us in terms of the challenges that the council faces in this budget season. I'm going to put the OMF cuts and adds in a little bit of context in terms of our priorities. And then the Deputy CAO, Carmen Merlo, is going to walk through our cuts and adds, some highlights of them in the framework of our strategic plan. And finally, Robert McCullough from our OMF Advisory Committee will represent the public members' perspective on the budget. So with that layout, I also want to underscore that we take very seriously the honor of going first and want to thank Mayor Wheeler and Andrew Scott and CBO for giving us this opportunity. We will gauge how well we do in terms of our performance today about whether we get invited back to be first next year. So we'll be waiting to hear what you decide on that. So let's talk about the Office of Management Finance first and get grounded in who we are, what we do. So our purpose is to provide the essential city services, in effect serving those who serve the city, all the work that needs to happen no matter what bureau or office you are in.
Hey, Tom, just so you know, the city council can't see what's behind us. So just let us know if you're switching.
Thank you for the reminder. As we're on that second slide.
Thanks.
Our purpose. Thanks, Mayor. Now we're on the third slide. So I want to walk through just a quick reminder to people about the way OMF is organized and what services we provide. Bureau of Human Resources, excuse me, provides all the people work that we need day-to-day. Benefits, site teams, classification and compensation, labor relations, payroll, employment and outreach work. Many people understand that as recruitment and retention and training. Cyril DeSummers-McGee is present to answer any questions you might have about BHR. The Bureau of Internal Business Services manages most of our hard assets, facilities, fleet. It also does risk management, printing and distribution, and the surplus property program. Brian Enge is also present in case commissioners have any questions about BIBS. The Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services is led by our Chief Financial Officer, Jennifer Cooperman. Debt, accounting, treasury services, procurement, and grants are among its key services. The Bureau of Technology Services, all those mini computers that most of us carry around, desktops, laptops, software, information security, customer service in terms of all the technology, and a lot of other invisible things that we hardly understand about technology is BTS's responsibility. And finally, the Office of the Chief Administrative Officer, my office, the Business Operations Team provides budget and strategic support to all the OMF bureaus. Our Strategic Projects and Opportunities Team works on key citywide projects of multiple bureaus and city council priorities, the Spectator Venues Program, and the Communications Team. So that's the overview of what we do each day to make the city work. The next slide builds upon the timely comments of the mayor, and I want to just touch on it briefly in terms of the foundational background of what I believe is facing the City Council in this budget process. It is not an overstatement to say we are in a historic period of growth in the city, and I don't think it's an overstatement to also say it's providing unprecedented opportunities and tension in terms of the public policy decisions you will be making on our resources. As I reflected on my first year and the many challenges we have in terms of meeting the demands of a growing city, I realized that I believe the central question facing you over the next few weeks, and hopefully we can help you with it, is how do you balance the demand for new and expanded services and programs with your responsibility to fund core services? How do you balance the demand for new and expanded services to meet a growing city's needs while also meeting your responsibility to fund core services? The mayor just spoke about the revenue and expense mismatch, and I think that as we deliberate together, that's a question that we should continually refer to. The pictures on the slide are exciting, and we have lots of opportunities, but we also have lots of work to do on deferred maintenance and other needs that we have.
And I really appreciate that half of those slides are parks and your recognition that there is a partnership between OMF and parks, and that
Absolutely.
Facilities includes facilities that are not necessarily managed by OMF. Thank you.
You're welcome. We consider ourselves part of everyone's staff. So we take that very seriously. The next slide, I want to just touch on different pieces of this vast impact that the growth is having on all the decisions we make and as a central service provider, what we see each day. So if you just look at that, you know, simple blue line in terms of the population growth, as an organization, the city of Portland, as an entity, is under a lot of stress. Our current organization is doing everything we can to meet the housing demands, both with private sector development in terms of permitting and construction, but also the new demands that the council has placed on the Housing Bureau to meet these demands out there in the community. The infrastructure work that has to occur each day in terms of not only new projects, but the backlog on deferred maintenance, the increasing needs for public safety, and the public's expectation that we will get better in terms of everything related to technology, mobility, and automation, namely, that they will be able to access our services via their handheld device, via the internet, via all the ways that we now expect to be able to interact in the world. This is having a significant impact, and I think it'll come up again and again in Bureau's budget presentations. So as a CAO, what do I propose that we should already be doing, and what am I doing to help with this demand and the stresses on the city? I just want to touch on a couple today before we go through our budget. I pulled that quote from my job description just because I thought it was a helpful reminder to me and for my team about what we should be doing to help council and bureaus more efficiently and effectively manage the city. And I'm going to touch on three actions we are going to be taking, and I've been in discussion with the budget office and many of your offices about these over the last several weeks. So one key lesson is the 5% cut scenario that we have just undertaken has provided some significant wake-up calls, I think, across the city about what it would actually mean to take a 5% cut. So my own staff's analysis was that anything beyond 2% would significantly reduce expected service levels out in the community. Therefore, we are proposing that we take a more enterprise approach throughout the year and towards the next budget cycle on how we view the budget. It's one thing to ask each bureau and OMF and all the bureaus in the city to look at cuts within their own bureaus and ads. It's another thing to look across horizontally and say, council has key priorities. How will we reorganize our services, stop doing some things that we might be doing, reprioritize across the bureaus to get the priorities fulfilled? What do I mean by that? One example that we have is that in technology services, we see a variety of budget offers and packages throughout the city. We lack a central way of saying, in order to meet council's priorities and community priorities, what's one technology proposal that can do that? Where should that be funded? Where does it land? Instead of seeing dozens of different packages, how do we get to a spot where we actually have a unified approach that isn't just going down, up and down, but across the bureaus? On asset management, we've made a lot of progress on this, and I'll touch on this later, but we could do that in that area as well. And I'm happy to report that over the last year, our bureau directors' meetings have really moved in a healthy way in terms of being able to have these conversations. I'm going to close this initial section by just saying, as your CAO, I'm going to be working with bureau directors to take this approach on some budget challenges. The mayor has said very clearly, and I think we all realize, that at some point we are going to have to take significant cuts when the economy turns. We should be prepared with various scenarios for council instead of just having to respond to a 7 or 9 or 11% cut. We should have new scenarios for how we operate.
So I want to be clear, we don't need to just approach this from a cuts perspective. I'm also interested in efficiencies, potential partnerships to eliminate any duplications, if there are any, and new revenues. I mean, I think we need to think broadly about how to address this issue. Are you going to make the case at some point in your presentation? You mentioned that more than 2% cuts impact community expectations, or however. Are you going to make that case?
We will talk about it in the OMF budget perspective.
I love you, Tom, but I'm not going to take you at face value on that. I want to see the.
We will make the case in the OMF budget presentation. I will sit at the table for all the presentations, and I will be keenly aware of where I think cuts will deeply impact community services, and I'll talk about them.
Great, I appreciate it. And I want to remind everybody, we have our citizen volunteer budget people here, and every year they ask the best questions. And so I want to remind all of you again, thank you for your participation, and please feel free to chime in whenever you see fit.
Bullet point number two, replacement and major maintenance reserves. So one of the key points from my excellent staff's analysis of the budget recommendations, as well as the fine work that CBO did and the performance management report and its own recommendations, is that we have a lot of work to do as a city in terms of the way we budget for reserves for replacing our equipment and keeping adequate reserves for our facilities. In short, there are going to be lots of bureaus that come in front of you for one-time funding, and the reality is we should have been putting money away over several years knowing that we were going to replace equipment or actually have to update or upgrade and maintain buildings. This is not a best practice, and I have asked the Chief Financial Officer to work with the City Budget Office on a financial policy to bring in front of you so that we can start to build this process into our city operations. I've also
Tom,
alerted all.
Could I just give two quick examples of that to give a narrative to it or draw a picture? The City Council had a very uncomfortable vote earlier this year for it was a $2 million request for bullets for the police bureau. And for obvious reasons, the optics on that weren't particularly great. And my question to the police bureau was, why are they not reserving for something like this rather than coming to the City Council every couple of years and saying, guess what, we're out of money for bullets? Then there was another question in the Fire Bureau about, I believe it was clothing, if I remember correctly, that's critically important to the health and safety of our firefighters. And I was wondering, why on earth is there not a reserve for something that's critical to health and safety of our employees? So those are just two that came to mind as you said that.
Mayor, Council, you will see others. So as you are mindful of it during the budget session, I want you to know we are going to come up with a policy proposal for you so that we can, over the years, build reserves and be responsible about the maintenance of our equipment and our facilities.
Tom, when will that be coming?
I have just asked the Chief Financial Officer to work with the Budget Office on this. So I don't have a timeline on this yet. I wanted you to be alerted to the fact that throughout the budget process, you will see these one-time requests.
And right.
I don't know if you want to build on that, Andrew. It looks like
it's such a key point, and I'll just really briefly. I mean, this is something that we've talked about for a while, and it's been a real struggle. And I think that a financial policy is going to be really important because, really, again, as we opened up, it's about offsets and trade-offs. The way we build these reserves into our existing budget is by cutting back on some of the frontline services that we're providing. It's the responsible thing to do, and you're going to hear us talk about this in the asset management report as well. We're essentially maintaining a level of service that we're not fully funding when we're not funding these reserves. And so it's going to be an important point, but it's not easy, right? It's not easy to just say, well, let's set aside these millions of dollars for reserves. It will require some trade-offs as well.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. The question is when we'll get that report in this process, because I share your concerns and the mayor's concerns with the fact that these reserves are grossly underfunded, but we're currently operating in the dark. As far as I know, I don't know what the targets are for these reserves. I don't know how much we should be setting aside every year. So it would be incredibly helpful to me. I'm just wondering, is it going to be in this budget process or is it going to be?
Commissioner, we will get you a draft and have the discussion as soon as we're able on it. I think you're raising a key point. Just to be perfectly clear on it, I didn't flag this, and my team didn't flag this, and we didn't have good follow-up conversations on the context and the history of this with CBO until the last couple weeks. So we are coming to this from that perspective citywide. We have been raising the question for pretty my time and in my first year as CAO around major maintenance reserves and the industry standard on that for just the OMF-owned facilities. There's debate about where that should be. We're currently around 1%. We believe we should be closer to 3%. So, there's work to be done too on council directive on where we should be, and how long it should take us responsibly to get to those reserve levels, because that's also clearly going to be a part of this conversation.
But to be fair, we've had asset management updates every year that I've been here, and every year we know that we're not spending nearly as much as we should be on ongoing maintenance. Every year I've put in a new request for increasing the maintenance for parks. We have doubled it in the time that I've been Commissioner, but it's still less than $2 million, which is ridiculous for the amount of facilities that we have. And even this year, although we're getting more major maintenance money, it's already been allocated, according to the CBO, for something that we think is more urgent, so it's not going to go into a reserve. So the problem has been known for a long time. The challenge is finding the money to put into those reserves. And the answer, do it from within bureau budgets, then what do we cut?
I agree. It'll be a difficult conversation. Thank you. Lastly, on this slide, and I appreciate the engagement on this one, my kids last night were not nearly as engaged when I practiced this presentation. So, They told me it was decent, which okay, I'll take it from them.
Wow.
Capital budgets and planning. City, building on Commissioner Fritz's comments, the city's made a lot of progress on this over the last several years, and credit is due the infrastructure bureaus and the city budget office on this. We are doing a better job at planning. We are doing a better job sharing information and best practices with the city asset managers group. What I'm raising here and asking our deputy CIO to lead with CBO and infrastructure bureaus is an incremental approach to build on this success and move towards an overlapping or integrated citywide capital improvement plan. Our sister cities in Vancouver, British Columbia, and Seattle, and others up and down the West Coast have really done an excellent job at looking at the ways these plans overlap, taking advantage of economies of scope and scale. And we have good first efforts at this. Bureau of Transportation and Environmental Services are looking at locations of the city together and leveraging their assets. But we have a ways to go to mature this process. And I'm excited to report to you that everyone's up for this. Folks know we need to get better. And we have all the confidence in the world that Deputy CAO Merlot and the team will do a great job with recommendations. So I want to tell you that the infrastructure challenges that I identified at the outset that you know about each week in working with your bureaus, we're going to have a proposal for you in terms of improving that and getting cost efficiencies and doing a better job. So getting off that slide finally, thank you for your patience. The impact of the growth that I laid out and how it's going to impact the OMF priorities 2018 to 2020 is what I just want to touch on before we start to dig into our budget. So each week, since our bureaus are dealing with this in terms of how to respond to the exponential increase in service demand from our partner bureaus, whether it's Parks and Recreation or Transportation or Water, or the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, be who it may, we have really focused on looking at how can we be a best use. So this slide, in terms of the OMF 2018-2020 priorities, you will consistently see from us, we're going to try to preserve and strengthen these core capacities so that we can get this work done. So recruiting and onboarding employees. We have thousands of employees. We have lots of impending retirements. How do we recruit, train, and keep the best people? Contracting and procurement, we are setting records for how much we have to get out the door each year to build and maintain this city. We have to do a better job at making sure that the contracts actually move and that we hold people accountable for our goals on those contracts. As I've mentioned a couple of times, state-of-the-art technology solutions. Everyone wants more, faster, and better. We're going to do as much as we can to convince you to invest in technology, and we're working hard with the bureaus to get agreement on what that is. Talked a lot about asset management, revenue collection. We are firm believers that we should be spending as much as we can to get that marginal next dollar. I think you'll hear from Robert McCullough at the end a little bit about that as well, because he's been consistent. And finally, we are going to continue to focus on leading enterprise initiatives, the work that one bureau or entity in the city can't accomplish by itself and needs help, augmentation, and project management and support. We are going to continue to build that capacity because as the city grows into a major city, we're going to need more of that. So lastly, before I hand it over to Carmen, I want to just make sure council knows a couple things about our customer outreach.
It isn't me. It's someone else. I apologize.
It's okay. It's my cue to hand it over, Rob.
Nice touch, John.
The customer outreach is challenging within the Office of Management and Finance, and I want to talk about that. We work very hard with an excellent advisory committee. We have built upon the budget note you gave us last year to do an analysis with the customer bureaus on what we do and how it should be funded, particularly on the general fund side. The Bureau of Technology Services has a very extensive outreach effort in terms of its stakeholders on what people want to purchase or what they want to advocate for. And we have a series of ad hoc conversations with people about what they support and why. That being said, we have identified that we need to radically simplify our process so that whether you're an assistant director in a bureau or you're the operations manager or whether you're a bureau director or you're an interested community member, you know where to go to have input on the OMF budget. There, frankly, are too many touch points on this, and it's too complex to understand how do I have my voice heard and how do I help make a decision on what should be prioritized. So I want council clear that we have worked hard at it. We have many different points, but you will see a different model from us towards the fall about how we are going to do this so that your bureaus are clear on what you're recommending that we do and how to fund it. So with that, I think you've had probably too much time, but I appreciate your time and attention. Of course, I'll be here for questions, but I'm going to hand it over to Deputy CAO Merlot to finish it off.
I have to say, I'd never had this kind of crowd for my PBAN budget presentations. So earlier this year, OMF completed its 2018-2020 strategic plan. You heard from Tom about some of the external drivers that informed the development of the strategic plan goals. The way I like to summarize our strategies is by saying that it invests and readies our workforce, we are innovating our business processes, and it's delivering on performance. So we've got three strategies. Adopting 21st Century Business Solutions takes a look at our business practices, what they are, and how we're doing it. And here you'll see concerted efforts to modernize our asset management program, strengthen our customer service relationships by developing service level descriptions and adopting new technology platforms and cybersecurity measures to streamline business processes. Under developing an inclusive, talented workforce, our goal is to advance employer of choice initiatives that attract, develop, and retain a diverse workforce and strengthen onboarding and talent management strategies. And then finally, leading citywide initiatives envisions a stronger citywide structure that sees the CAO as the convener of citywide projects and initiatives. We reached a fairly significant milestone last year when council and bureau directors signed a charter approving the major city projects, and those include the 311 Customer Relationship Management Program, Mayor Your Build Portland Initiative, and permitting reform. And then it also includes, of course, the reconstruction of the Portland building. Tom, as well, is leading a group of city leaders to advise council on enterprise risk management. So that'll take me to our, finally, decision packages. OMF submitted 58 packages. Tom asked me to go through them one by one in detail. Kidding. We're certainly happy to answer any questions you have, but I wanted to focus particularly on packages, Mayor, that not only speak to your budget priorities and budget guidance, that also help advance our strategic plan goals. So I've picked a few that I think do that. First, with BHR, we've heard from bureaus that hiring takes too long and not enough outreach is being done to recruit a diverse workforce and build relationships with community organizations that can help develop a pipeline of diverse and talented candidates. So this first package adds three human resource analysts for employment and outreach. This would essentially replace funding for two current interagency funded positions with BDS and PBOT and adding a third position. Doing so gives BHR greater flexibility to distribute the workload assignments more equitably and efficiently. The next is an ad package to address immediate response cleanups for homeless camps. OMF requested $1.5 million of ongoing costs to respond to the increase and the frequency of immediate cleanup requests. Of particular note, it changes the funding source from interagency agreements primarily with property-owning bureaus, and here we're talking about parks, BES, water, and PBOT, and instead moves it to general fund discretionary. We asked for $1.5 million ongoing, and CBO's recommendation was for $500,000 one time. Given that we've already spent to date about $1 million, we can see that it's clearly not going to be able to meet the demands in future years. In keeping with your guidance that all revenue-generating programs be held harmless from reductions, the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services submitted a suite of packages that fund tax collection specialists to maximize revenue from income tax and utility franchise fees. One caveat to note here is that the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services submitted a package for 5 tax collection specialists for 3 years, and CBO recommended 3 for 1 year. While the City Budget Office mostly did not recommend cut packages from the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services, there are a couple of exceptions that I do want to point out because they do impact our ability to meet social and digital equity goals. BRFS submitted an ongoing cut package for a senior administrative specialist position whose work does directly support social equity programs. There were also ongoing cuts to external materials and services for both the minority evaluator program and the program, the prime contractor development program. CBO took the ongoing cut but did provide one-time funding as a stopgap measure. And then the other package, if taken in full, would cut about $72,000 from our existing contract with Open Signal. And we do have representatives here from Open Signal if you have any questions about that. And then finally, I would like to thank CBO for their recommendation for a bundle of Bureau of Technology Services packages that directly address data security of mobile devices and which improve the operational efficiencies in deploying all of our city phones, tablets, and other mobile devices that and improve the life cycle replacement of our PCs and laptops by expediting the replacement cycle from 5 years to 4 years. All of those cuts were very heavily favored by our customer service bureaus. You want to introduce Robert?
Any questions?
So that's a very quick snapshot of our packages.
Go ahead. I saw some body language on questions. Do you have questions on them? Okay. Great.
There is a policy question here around immediate response cleanups. And so let's put the policy question aside for the moment, whether people are for it or against it. But factually, the number of camps we have cleaned up, and I want to be very clear, they're mostly abandoned camps, and they are either public health or environmental risks, has gone up dramatically just in the last year. So this is an example of an issue, in my opinion, where the dynamic is changing, the expectation of the community is changing, and yet the way it has been proposed we fund this is with a reduced expectation over even what we spent last year in one-time-only money. So how does this get at the objective that we laid out right up front about responsibly and sustainably funding things that are clearly expectations of the community? You're putting aside for the fact that people may just say, I don't like it, I want to zero it out. That's a legitimate position for somebody to take. But if you believe it should exist, how is this consistent with those objectives?
Well, I think the question goes to the CBO.
It does. Yeah, Andrew.
Yeah, I'll have Katie talk a little bit about sort of the recommendation. Again, just sort of putting the overall context, I mean, I think it's worth saying that every cut we took and every ad package we recommended was, sort of searching for that balance in terms of what the initial cut would be to fund it. And I think with this package, Mayor, you've correctly identified there is a level of service question. What is the level of service that the city wants to provide in terms of cleaning up these campsites? And then there's the question of how we pay for it and whether that comes from general fund dollars, and the more general fund we invest in this, the less we invest in other things, or whether it comes from the bureaus that own the land, which really the trade-off there is just what those bureaus do, the services they provide, providing less. So I think I do want to sort of differentiate, but Katie will talk a little bit about sort of the CBO recommendation.
Yeah, the recommendation right now is so it's about a $3 million program as submitted by OMF. This recommendation would take $500,000 of that for immediate campsite cleanups and replace that from IA funding to general fund and one-time funding. So the remainder of the program would stay in place, and bureau-requested cleanups would continue sort of like as identified by bureaus.
Okay, that's helpful. Yeah. Thank you.
And I'd also note, too, that the dollar amount, the $500,000, is the same dollar amount as roughly as it is in the current year. We're just overspending our interagency agreements right now, so we've overspent the interagency agreements.
So the bottom line is there's a lot more to the story here. Okay.
Yeah, and I don't know that we have enough budget in parks, for example, to fund all the things that we need. So I think the question is still germane.
Thank you.
I want to introduce Robert McCullough from our OMF Advisory Committee before we engage more deeply in questions, because I could see the trend. Robert, thanks for being here. You have 2 minutes to weigh in on the budget.
Thank you very much. 2 minutes. 2 minutes.
God, he's reduced me from 1 minute already. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you. You always treat me well. I'm going to, unfortunately, not treat you as well today. Mayor, you know that I think you're a fine mayor, and the budget office does a fine job. But the fact of the matter is we are gradually going bankrupt. If you feel like a lobster that's been put in boiling water, year after year we're in financial exigency. Year after year we have these same speeches. I've been here in the same mode in previous years. This is the top of the boom. Property values have leveled off. They've fallen in approximately half the neighborhoods over the last 3 months. We are an export-based business with a president who is declaring a trade war. We have more exposure to exports than most states. We only have 2 corporate headquarters in the city, which means that we don't have long-term stability. You know this. You've lived through it. In fact, I'm looking at Commissioner Saltzman who's saying, I know this, but we aren't paying attention. So I'm going to focus on just 2 of the ad packages because they are critical. We are not collecting our taxes. Our staff is doing an excellent job, but there are not enough of them. You've recommended 3 out of 5 staff positions. Let me be very blunt. There is nothing glamorous about tax collections. It is grueling. It is boring. It is labor intensive. You've recommended 1 year. We've been behind on tax recovery for many years. We have very little increase in overall tax collections coming out of one of the deepest recessions to one of the biggest booms. We need those 5 positions. Number 2, the IRS database allows us to catch people who don't pay taxes. We fund it year to year. It is very inefficient to take major tools on a year-to-year basis. In fact, it's self-defeating. So as you hear that water bubble around you, you have to face up to the fact that we have to collect all of the taxes to keep afloat. In fact, keep afloat is a mixed metaphor. To climb out of the pot before we're eaten, because we are on that path. So did I make my 2 minutes? Good.
Thank you, Dan. Thanks, Robert. Appreciate it.
And could I ask one follow-up question,
of course,
Mr. McCullough? So just to be clear, the IRS database is critical in your mind because we use that to cross-check payments for the business income tax. Is that correct?
Correct. And the arts tax. We don't have any way of knowing who is paying their taxes or not paying their taxes. But the IRS database is the critical tool because we can cross-check. And we're doing it now. But we're doing it inefficiently on a year-to-year basis. That has to be a solid base tax collection tool.
Mayor, Mayor, if we could just have
Denisha has a question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, let's do Denisha.
So assuming that they successfully collect taxes, these are self-sustained positions, right?
The yield on these positions is enormous. I mean, the fact is, if we catch just a few scofflaws on the business tax, we would pay all of these costs. It is an amazing rate of return.
So with that, we're open for questions. Unless Katie, do you have some?
Talk a little bit about this since you brought up the specific 5 revenue positions.
Yeah, I was just going to talk a little bit about the recommendation. So for the ad tax collection staff, so it's 5 positions, 3 of which are tax collection specialist 4s. There's 1 tax collection specialist 5, and then 1 business systems analyst. The rationale for, as I understand it, for asking for more FTE is because the compliance rate is expected to sort of decrease, right? So this is about preserving the existing compliance rate and making sure that it doesn't fall. Our understanding was that the sort of driving rationale for that is because there's an increased customer workload with an increase in the number of business license tax accounts. So it's tax document entry, it's customer service workload. So we are recommending the 3 positions that are most directly related to that body of work, you know, in sort of an environment where there are limited resources. We didn't see it as direct of a connection between sort of the workload described and sort of preserving that compliance rate and the other 2 positions. And then on the IRS data exchange, I would just say that, you know, we that program had some sort of late-breaking improvements late last fiscal year, and so, you know, it does seem to have a positive ROI in the current year and going forward. We are recommending it one time, and again, because of, you know, sort of limited resources, but also because that program will eventually be a part of the integrated tax system that's going forward. And so we don't have a whole lot of clarity right now on the ongoing resources that would be required to maintain that system under the integrated tax system. So that's another reason for the one time.
When would we know that?
That's probably a question for the revenue division staff. But I understand the integrated tax system is coming online in roughly 3 years. That's the current estimate.
3 years. Okay, thank you.
Is that a federal thing, the integrated tax effort?
No, that's just an improvement in our current system. So going from BLIS to an integrated tax system. And they're considering using a sort of benefits-based financing model. So the ongoing cost for that program is just not clear to us at this point in time. So we're in favor of the program. We think it should definitely stick around, and it's very important.
Rob?
Yeah, is there a difference in cost in doing it year to year versus doing a multi-year contract? I mean, you can do things year to year because it gives you more flexibility, as you're saying, if there's not a difference in cost. I understand that part of the argument has to do with stability, but it's not the expectation that you're going to change products because it's not effective. You're saying it does have a positive ROI.
Yeah, I would say that, I mean, there's probably some lack of certainty for, you know, the revenue division, right, having to be funded on a one-time basis year over year over year, but I'm not aware of any cost inefficiencies, but I'll let Thomas to speak to that.
The primary problem with thank you, Thomas Lanham, Revenue Division Director. The primary problem is exactly that, right? We've had 5 years of one-time funding on a program I think we all agree is net positive ongoing. And so, you know, just staffing the function is a real problem in this economy, especially with unemployment the way that it is, attracting talent, retaining talent in those positions that are key to keep this program up is a real problem. That's the primary issue. You know, in terms of the ongoing workload in 3 years, four, we don't have an actual timeline yet for the integrated tax system project, which you've funded to get kicked off. What we do know is that the federal taxpayer information, once we're in the ITS environment, we're still going to need to support that program. We're still going to need the two positions to keep that program stood up, even in ITS. So there may be other efficiencies, and I underscore maybe other efficiencies once ITS goes live. But we know that the FTI positions are going to be needed after go live.
Thank you, Thomas. Rob, did you have a follow-up? Dan?
Well, I was just curious. What is our compliance rate for business license fee payment?
I'm very glad you raised that. Our current compliance rate is around 83%, which is a 10-year low.
10-year low?
A 10-year low, yeah. Normally at this time of the year, we're at about 88% compliance. The compliance rate is cyclic, of course, because it follows the tax cycle. But the tremendous growth in the accounts that we maintain, we've added about 33,000 accounts in the last 24 months, which is a 52% increase.
Wow.
Not all those accounts are performing in terms of actually collecting revenue, but we have to follow up and verify exemptions. We can't just, you know, not do the work even just because there isn't a check attached to it. So that additional customer service work is actually what's dragging our current collection staff away from collections and compelled to do the customer service work first. We can't not answer the phones. We can't not enter tax returns. So we're seeing the impact now of that lower compliance rate. For each 1% for each 2% of compliance rate slippage in the business license tax environment, we are losing about $1.1 million per year. So that 5% difference that we're currently registering off our 10-year average is costing us, we think, about $2.8 million a year. So the full package, the five positions, should help us narrow that, and we've offered to CBO a methodology to measure that. So you will have assurances when we come back next year that your dollars were well spent.
Thank you.
I have a few questions.
We're open for any and all questions, and other OMF directors are present, so we can call up anyone that we need.
Could I get some clarity on where we're at with Open Signal?
Do
Did we, Thomas, would you want to stay or Jennifer take that one?
Well, I think the question, though, is why are you proposing big cuts to Open Signal?
Well, in keeping with the mayor's guidance to keep revenue-generating programs harmless, these were the only programs available in the revenue division where cuts could be taken. So,
okay, but leaving aside the fact that we're hopefully going to get it out of the revenue service, I'm assuming your question is concern about cuts to Open Signal.
Yeah, I mean, I read the recommendation, and I guess I'd like to hear from them, and I'd like to hear just the rationalization for the cut, which maybe that was it.
Commissioner, hi. Thank you. My name is Natalie Sept. I am a Director of Government Affairs for Open Signal. I'm a lobbyist of the City of Portland, registered with the City of Portland. Thank you for your question. I think Commissioner Fritz pointed out that we are in the process, given the budget note, of removing ourselves or getting out of OMF. We were put in there several years ago when there was some situation with leadership and there was lots of transition. Mm-hmm. And I think that our mission and fit has never been a good one for OMF and the Bureau of Revenue Services. Thank you for engaging in that process. I shared some notes this morning with Thomas Lanham in Bureau of Revenue Services that we would have to be cutting first our equity and access initiatives. Those particular initiatives are a cornerstone of what Open Signal represents, and we would have to limit our hours or office hours open to the public, which again is part of our core mission, and also reduce our diversity and inclusion initiatives specifically around the position. This is, I think, an oversight by the Bureau because of the position we're in, and we're really thankful for the opportunity to be able to speak and understand a little bit more, you know, where would be a really good fit within the city.
Could I just clarify, though, that revenue proposed cutting Open Signal by $288,000, or 31.5%, and the City Budget Office is recommending a $72,000 cut, which is 7.9%. So my question for you and for the Bureau is, if you don't mind me, is that all right if I jump in?
Please,
this. I thought the contract says you can't get cut by more than the city as a whole. Is that not still the case?
So that is up for discussion at this point. I know there's been conversations about, because we are in a process of negotiating a new agreement, that was a byline that is in there that says that we cannot be cut for more than 5%. I will let the rest of the Bureau talk a little bit about where we are in negotiations, but the agreement is still being
negotiated. Is the current contract still in effect?
I believe so.
Excuse me, I have a follow-up question regarding the same...
Let me just finish one thing. I don't understand how the Bureau can propose something that the contract doesn't allow and then count that as a proposed cut.
Thank you. That's a very good question, Commissioner. The contract expires on July 1st, 2018, and the cut would be effective July 1st, 2018.
Tanisha.
I have two issues with this cut. I'm a little familiar with Open Signal since I used to work there for 4 years as a development director before that program development director. In that amount of money cut the ability to do the work, period. I know Open Signal received funding for capital that we can't cut because it's part of the contract. But then you can't do anything with that capital equipment if you don't have the staff. So it's pointless. You could even put at risk what we're doing right now. So that is a big risk for the community. And I have the same question that I had last year and the year before. We keep saying that equity is a priority, and that's what's going to prevent the situation that we are in housing, but we keep cutting equity programs. So I just don't know how this is going to get us at a better place.
Could I ask a question as well? Do you also receive funding through RAC?
We receive limited amount of funding through RAC, but it's for separate programs that we are able to run by leveraging city funds.
I'm sorry, I interrupted Director DeSue. Do you want to...
Yes, thank you. It's a question to follow up on your questions. Have you determined the extent of the cut on digital equity for communities?
At OpenSignal.
Yeah, so have you determined the extent of the impact of the cut, whether it is partial or total cut, on digital equity for communities?
For communities that OpenSignal serves?
Yes, the OpenSignal services.
As I said, when I said before, any cut to OpenSignal will directly impact our digital equity and inclusion work. Mm-hmm. We would not be in a position to fund a digital equity and inclusion director, which holds accountable some of those metrics that we're hoping to fit. Diversity means lots of different things, and specifically having access to this kind of training helps people with workforce development, education, and enabling themselves to be able to do other things beyond what a higher education could potentially provide. Access is a cornerstone of what we're trying to do, and unfortunately, because of what Dineshka pointed out, because of our capital funding and what our city contract says, anything outside of what we're providing to the city is something that we're excited to do and fits with our mission, but would immediately have to be cut. It is directly in line with one of the priorities of the mayor to have equity and inclusion, but unfortunately, with any cut, we would have to cut that first.
Just want to point out that building on my point that I made earlier on the enterprise challenge bullet point on my CAO recommendations, for me this falls into, we put ourselves in these positions with these cut scenarios when we ask Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services to find a percentage of cuts, and they work very hard on what outside their core responsibilities or compliance and the things that they have to do per the city operation, where else can they cut? So we kind of force ourselves into these discussions instead of, and I believe we're not there yet, but we're starting to talk with CBO and others about, we could have a different approach across the enterprise to say, you know, we're not even going to have certain discussions because of the priorities council have laid out, and we're going to have aspirational goals. And yet we have asked bureaus, and not just within OMF, but others, to come up with a percentage cut that is going to prompt these conversations throughout the process. Yes, Commissioner Fritz.
I think that the question is, within the Office of Management and Finance, which is what we're discussing right now, if we hold harmless the equity program, if we hold harmless revenue, were there other places within OMF that could then propose other cuts?
We took the approach of asking each bureau to find their five.
I know, but you could,
we could certainly go back upon your direction to try to do that.
In line with what you were saying, is how do we realign and how do we look at the whole thing? It would be a good thing to start, and I'm going to do that within Parks as well.
That's great.
I just wanted to say, sorry, really quickly, that again, I think this is a great example where OpenSignal doesn't necessarily fit within this bureau, because we're seen not necessarily as understood with our mission fit. Digital equity, again, is one of our main points, but I think this conversation really highlights how OpenSignal isn't a good fit for this position.
So I'm looking at your budgets over the last 5 years, and our operating grant is about half your operation funds. Do we pay on top of that grant for services provided by OpenSignal, or is that wrapped in there?
Can you be more specific about what you mean?
Well, OpenSignal actually provide services for us. You come in and film our sessions, right? I presume we're paying for that.
Right.
Is that in addition to the operating grant, or is that contained within the grant?
Thank you. Thank you so much. That is, and Julie Amalchek, who's with MHCRC, is also here, who could speak to this too, since these are included in the particular contract that we have with the city.
I could use a breakdown of what we're paying for as far as services and then what we're granting. Here's my concern. OpenSignal has made some huge leaps forward in the last year or two. I would hate for our actions to undermine where they are, and I feel like if we're going to recommend a cut that would lead to a reduction in their staff by about 25%, that we would consider giving them a longer runway. That's my two cents. And I'm curious about where you think an appropriate home for OpenSignal might be in the city, but I don't, it's probably not the time for that.
We're going through that process right now. I think there's some good options coming out of the budget note. Great, yeah. Thank you.
So this is general Q&A now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
sure.
Thanks, Natalie.
So are you proposing to cut City Hall security? Or
can we have the BIBS team come up here, talk security?